Race of My Life, presented by Autosport.
I think when you try choosing your best race, it's less important what happens in the race and more important when it happens, what time in your life, and what the subsequent effects are. So, from that perspective, nothing beats my first Grand Prix win in Germany in 1963. The 156 Ferrari was a bit of an antiquated car. The 62 car had been a disaster for the team because they'd put most of their budget into the Le Mans 24-hour programme, so F1 was a bit of an afterthought. The team were down, in the same way that MV Agusta had been when I joined them in 1956. It was very Italian, very emotional. Those are the words of the late John Surtees describing his first World Championship F1 win, the 1963 German Grand Prix at the Nürburgring, which he picked as his race of my life for Autosport in 2009. This pick, which marked the first moment of winning success in Surtees' move into four-wheel Grand Prix racing in the World Championship, is the latest in our Race of My Life miniseries. I'm your host, Alex Kalanorkas, Autosport's Grand Prix editor, and with me again today is Autosport's chief editor, Kevin Turner. Now, Kev, this is obviously a very big moment for John Surtees. I know you spoke to him, you interviewed him once. How do you rate this drive, this pick?
Well, I think this is one of those selections where it's what it means to the drive. I mean, he's quite explicit about that, isn't he, at the start of that quote there. You know, it's what it means for his career and time at Ferrari. Yeah, he's right. Ferrari was, you know, on the floor really. He'd lost a load of staff, obviously, the year before. Having won the championship in 61, they really sort of fell off a cliff, really. And Surtees came along and he had experience of working with Italians through, you know, the motorbike world, very successful motorcycle racer, of course, probably the best motorcycle racer in the world when he decided to switch to four wheels.
Four-time 500cc world champion in 56, 58, 59 and 60.
Yeah, 60, managed to do it while dovetailing with his first car racing. So, yeah, remarkable. So he was in the process. I guess he considered this a sort of milestone number one of picking Ferrari off the floor and going on to win the championship in 1964. And let's be honest, should have won it in 1966 as well, had he not ended up falling out with the team. A milestone moment rather than, I think he even said that it wasn't necessarily his best drive, but it was the most important, and that's why he put it at number one.
So Surtees qualifies second. He has an early fight with Jim Clark for the lead, and then he gets ahead and pretty much dominates. And again, we've talked about the Nürburgring before, and again, it's not, you know, it's such a fearsome track, and it's sort of comparing various different eras, but you can't really understate just how tough it was, and therefore what a fine performance from Surtees to dominate so completely in this race.
Yes, I mean, Jackie Stewart used to say there were three races you needed to win: your home race, the Monaco Grand Prix, and the German Grand Prix, the Nürburgring. I think the Nürburgring was the one that the drivers really respected and wanted to win at. And Surtees was actually very good there. He was a Nürburgring, to say Nürburgring specialist is a bit unfair because obviously he was good elsewhere, but he was very good there. He won sports car races there. He won the German Grand Prix the following year as well, so he did it twice. That one, probably worth covering the context of the season. So as well as Ferrari being in the doldrums, Lotus and Jim Clark were winning everything. You know, he won 7 of the 10 World Championship rounds that year. And he had, unusually, it was the classic Clark getting the lead early on, disappear down the road, and the rest of the race happened somewhere behind him. In this instance, Surtees able to stay with him, take the lead. They swap places a couple of times. Surtees breaks that record to sort of break away from Clark. So it's a rare case of Clark and Lotus being beaten in 1963 with a car that was not on a par with the Lotus 25. The one caveat to that is that Clark did develop a misfire during the course of the race. And if you look at different accounts of the race, it's quite difficult to pinpoint when that was. So was Surtees already getting the better of him when the misfire hit, or was the misfire, had it already started when while they were fighting? And I guess probably the only person who would have been able to answer that question would have been Jim Clark. And obviously we're a long way away from being able to talk to him, unfortunately. So, because I doubt Surtees would have known. Colin Chapman wouldn't have known either, I wouldn't have thought. And because it's such a long lap, you know, it could have happened. Yeah, if it had happened early on in one lap, that could have made all the difference. So you just don't know. So that's the one caveat against that drive. But certainly just the fact that he was in the mix with a car that had a car driver combination that had basically, you know, thumped everyone and was thumping everyone during the course of the season means that it should be in consideration wherever you want to slot it in.
And why was it that Ferrari wasn't in such good shape? Obviously, we heard from Surtees at the start that they'd been committed to the Le Mans program ahead of F1. Really, is that fair to say? Because obviously, you looking back at it in 2020, that's something, you know, like if you've come to the sport a bit later, you don't know about Ferrari's old, you know, mega success at Le Mans in that era. It's something that you would never think, like prioritizing another program ahead of F1. What's going on there? So perhaps you could just give a bit of explanation about why that was happening.
Well, Surtees, yeah, it was a bit of a beef of Surtees, and actually it's the falling out with Ferrari happens at Le Mans in 66, because he's first of all, he's tasked with challenging the big Fords, which were quicker, bigger engines, tasked with, you're the one driver that can take the challenge to Ford, and then at the last minute, oh, actually, but we're going to put someone else in the car, and he just had enough of all the nonsense and decided, I think he drove from Le Mans to Maranello to speak to Enzo that moment.
Pretty bold move.
But, I mean, he was one of those guys not to be trifled with, Surtees, and of course neither was Enzo. And although they didn't come to an agreement, I think there was mutual respect there, even later in life. But yeah, so Ferrari, Ferrari built road cars so that it could go racing. That was the original plan, and winning Le Mans was seen as, and I think still is, seen as a good way of trying to sell road cars.
Worked very well for Audi, didn't it?
Yeah, and of course in those days the cars, certainly in the GT category, were very close to the road car. So the 250 GT Ferraris through the 50s and the early 60s, the GTO, they were cars that were sold both as road cars and as privateer, customer GT racing cars. So it was quite a big deal for Ferrari. It was quite early on in the season, June, which in those days there wouldn't necessarily have been many World Championship Grand Prix by then. So that gives you a bit of an insight into the mentality of, well, let's get Le Mans won first and then we'll start focusing. And even in 1964, when Surtees does ultimately win the championship, he doesn't really get going for him until the second half of the season. It's a pretty disastrous start. I mean, he has a disastrous start and Clark has a disastrous finish, which is why they're going to the season finale basically together. That was a frustration that Surtees had. And it's worth saying that obviously at this point, Ferrari in the middle of an incredible winning streak at Le Mans. They'd won every year since 58, apart from 59 when Aston Martin won, and they would go on winning until 65 was the last one, and the Ford big money finally defeated them in 66. So it was a really big thing for Ferrari, and I think sports car fans would quite like to see a big budget sports car effort from Ferrari at some point in the future. But we've been waiting since 1973 since the last works effort, so I think we were waiting a bit longer.
Yes, but wouldn't it be very cool to see? Now let's just return very briefly, as you were saying, to the idea of Surtees being a Nürburgring specialist, because there's various things that back that up. He's very successful there on motorcycles. Just a few weeks before the 1963 German Grand Prix, he's won the 1,000-kilometer sports car race there, and the same equivalent F1 race the year before, he finishes second in the Lola. So he's obviously pretty damn good around the Nürburgring, let's say it that way. But a nice little stat that I enjoy here, which I think really strengthens the argument for why this is, should be considered Surtees' race of my life, is, as you say, okay, maybe the misfire, whatever, with Clark, but it's just the fact that he beats Clark in the Lotus. That's really what makes it special for me. But apparently, this is the only time in Clark's World Championship F1 career that he finishes second.
Yes, that is true. Yeah,
so I just think that's amazing.
Unique. Well, because he, with the combination of Clark and Lotus, was normally the fastest combination, apart from 1966 with the whole engine formula change, but by and large they were the quickest combination. So if he finished, he tended to win, and obviously if he didn't finish, he wouldn't have got a second place. So yeah, that's the sort of one statistical anomaly, but quite an unusual one. So yeah, so you could say Surtees is the only driver to have beaten Clark into second place in a World Championship Grand Prix.
That's pretty cool. It's a pretty cool achievement. Now what we heard from Surtees at the start about why he picked this and what it meant for him, and obviously it is a real big breakthrough success. So what are your thoughts on that about what it meant to him, considering what he would go on to achieve?
I think it probably helps. It helps cement his position within the team. So I would liken it a little bit to, I think there have been three key drivers that have arrived at Ferrari and made a difference. I think Surtees was the first one. The team perhaps wasn't quite as ready for the big changes that came later. Second one was Niki Lauda, and the third one was obviously Marcus Schumacher. Now Schumacher, when he joined, he was already double world champion. He underlined how good he was at the Spanish Grand Prix in 1996, his first year with the team. But I think he had probably, he could have got away with not winning for a while because obviously he was the best driver in the world at the time. Whereas Lauda and Surtees had to establish their authority much sooner. Lauda joined as a pay driver from BRM, and Surtees had only really just got going on four wheels, probably had a bit more of a status in the sport overall because of his motorcycle wins. But that win nice and early on, an obvious driver's track against, you know, the combination, I suspect, helped gather some passion, some Italian passion on his side, so that he could start making things happen. And the 1964 car was actually a very good one once they got it reliable. And Surtees was very much the point man for that operation until Dragoni came along, new team boss, and it all went a bit pear-shaped. But until then, that was sort of some drivers get like a honeymoon period at Ferrari before things go a bit wrong, which is something that Carlos Sainz perhaps should keep in mind on given recent news events. But that would have cemented his position in the team, basically.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, a stunning drive, as we've said, to win at such a fearsome track ahead of such a legendary opposition in Clark. But were there any potential alternatives that Surtees could have gone for? I mean, there's a fair few to choose from, but any real standout candidates, Kev?
Well, if you're picking significant races, then you'd have to say the 1964 Mexican Grand Prix would be up there. And I did speak to him.
It's pretty hard not to argue about that one, is it?
Yes.
Considering what he achieves and just the sheer with the stakes, because it's the season finale and with three drivers in the contention for the world title.
The 64 season is actually a really fascinating one because, as I said, by and large, the Lotus Clark combo was the quickest in the 60s. But 64, if you look at the raw pace of the cars, so you've got Graham Hill at BRM, John Surtees at Ferrari, Jim Clark at Lotus, and Dan Gurney at Brabham. And actually on pace, they're very evenly matched across the season. Each of them has, you know, great days where they just clear off and win. Each of them has days where reliability doesn't work for them, they don't get it together, whatever. And it just ends up that the Brabham and Gurney have even worse luck than everyone else, so they're not in the championship fight, really. But it goes to the season finale with Clark, Hill and Surtees. And Clark's doing everything he needs to do early on, disappears down the road, does the usual Lotus trick, usual Clark trick. And because of the high altitude, the Ferrari engine isn't working very well and it's bogging around and misfiring, and Surtees is really unhappy about it. But he shows sort of dogged determination to keep going, keep pressing away. And as the race develops, it eventually clears itself and he starts to put on a charge. And he catches the battle for third between his teammate Lorenzo Bandini and Graham Hill. They contrive to have a clash, puts Hill out, so Hill's out of contention. But at this point, you've got Clark in the lead, Dan Gurney second, Bandini third, and Surtees up there in fourth. So he's already done the hard work to get into contention, but the championship looks like it's going to miss out. And then in the closing miles, Clark's Lotus fails him. So he retires, Gurney moves into the lead, and Bandini gets the message early enough to get out of the way or let Surtees through. So Surtees finishes second and clinches the world championship. And it's always seen as a bit of a lucky victory in the championship, the lucky second place. And certainly Clark was very unlucky in 64. But when I spoke to Surtees about it, you know, 4 or 5 years ago, he said, yeah, but I'd been so unlucky earlier in the year. You know, you look at the results early on, I couldn't finish a race. So I was giving away all these points when Clark was winning. So he said, I felt that it evened itself out, which is fair enough, really. I certainly think, given how good Surtees was, you wouldn't begrudge him a world champion here. His record of 6 world championship Grand Prix wins does not do him justice at all. You know, because he was really right up there as one of the best drivers of the 60s.
Absolutely. I think very hard to argue against him deserving to win the world title. But I think if we're going to sort of come down to later when I make my judgments, as I've decided I can do as the host of this podcast, about whether an alternative can trump Surtees' pick. I'm struggling with this one because if you take the title significance out of the equation, it is a lucky result for him. But then at the same time, that the title adds everything. You know, we know from our own lives what pressure can do to people. We know, you know, consider what you know, to be an elite sportsman in the ultimate moment where there's three of you that could win and any outcome is possible. It's almost very difficult to subtract that from the race alone, as it were. So yeah, it's a difficult one, really. But my inclination is to just side with Nürburgring in 63 because it was such a fine performance, and there wasn't, okay, maybe there might have been a bit of luck involved with Clark's misfire, we don't know, but I just think that gives it the edge. But we'll come to that at the end. What other races would you suggest? Because Kev, you did another very fine top 10 legends list for autosport.com, which is available on autosport.com+. You did that for John Surtees. So what alternatives could you have gone for Race of My Life?
Well, two that immediately spring to mind. One is another one at the cost of Clark. So 1967 Italian Grand Prix in the Hondola, as it was called. It was a Honda, but Eric Broadley and the Lola concern were heavily involved in the car. And so the race is famous for Clark's comeback from a lap down after a puncture, catches Jack Brabham and Surtees, who are fighting. Well, actually, I think he catches them before they get together, but he goes through into the lead, leaves them to battle over second place, and then has fuel pickup problems on the last lap and falls to third. I think the Lotus 49 was almost in a different category of car at that point compared to the others, so I wouldn't hold that against Surtees particularly. What I like about this is the close finish, and he knows that there is an oil slick down the inside into the parabolica, which is the last corner of the right-hander, which Graham Hill's Lotus had left by blowing up while in the lead a few laps earlier. And they'd somehow managed to get cement dust down. No yellow flags. Well, there might have been yellow flags, but not a safety car period. Obviously,
I mean, all of this sounds terrifying.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. And this is pre-chicane Monza as well, yeah. So they'd have been approaching, they'd have been flat through Ascari down towards Parabolica, flat chat. And Surtees later said, I knew that Brabham, I knew that Jack was, he would have been tempted. He said, I'd have been tempted too. So Brabham has no choice, really. Surtees stays wide, lets Brabham decide to risk it on the oil, the cement, slides wide. Surtees tucks back underneath him, and Brabham fails to out-drag him on the run to the line. So he wins by, it's one of those races that's decided by nothing across the line. So, dramatic finish. And again, just a bit of clever thinking on the hoof, really, at the crucial moment. So the other one is a non-championship Grand Prix, the 1964 Solitude Grand Prix, which is an epic circuit, in difficult conditions.
What about the 1966 Mexican Grand Prix, which Surtees wins from pole position for Cooper? Now, it's quite interesting, I think, just to discuss this because of what we spoke about earlier with his dynamics within Ferrari, because he'd left, after two races that year after he won at Spa due to the situation arising there. So, how do you rate that, and would that be potentially an alternative pick for Race of My Life?
I don't think it would trump the Nürburgring Ferrari drive. It's quite an interesting one. That whole 66 season is quite interesting because a lot of the teams are caught on the hop. Ferrari probably should win the championship, and Jack Brabham, very pragmatic, gets things right. But Ferrari, Surtees wins the Belgian Grand Prix, Ferrari, and gets berated for allowing Jochen Rindt's Cooper Maserati to lead, even though the reason he's doing that is because he's following his wheel tracks until it dries and then overtakes him and wins quite comfortably. So he's got it completely under control. Anyway, so when he falls out with Ferrari's management, he then joins Cooper with the T81, which has appeared recently in one of my other lists as one of the ugliest F1 race winners of all time, I would suggest. But it actually was surprisingly effective. The impressive thing about Surtees here is he joins the team and he's immediately faster than Jochen Rindt. And bearing in mind, okay, so Rindt hadn't won a Grand Prix yet. He had won Le Mans, but not a Grand Prix. He becomes one of the guys, the fastest guys in Formula 1. So for Surtees to blow him away quite comprehensively is interesting. And he gives Cooper its first pole for 4 or 5 years, I think, in Mexico. And, makes a slow start, but just works his way forward. And it's clearly one of those days where car and driver are just working better than anything else. It was obviously a strange venue, Mexico City, up there with the altitude. The year before, Richie Ginther had won in the Honda, which was its one and only win as well. It was just I guess that choice would underline Surtees' ability after joining, leaving Ferrari and going to Cooper, and still finishing second in the World Championship despite all the nonsense that went on during the season.
As a very brief aside, I do love a tangent. I would, if anyone, if you can, I would highly recommend anyone goes to that Mexico Grand Prix or to the Formula E race. It's just a fantastic venue there. I went twice when I covered Formula E, and just standing in the pit lane, you're just like, this is a cool motor racing venue. And it was so wonderful that Formula E went there, because obviously a lot of the tracks that they race on are brand new. Anyway, there, I've gone off on a completely random tangent. But Kev, yeah, any other alternatives you could suggest that Surtees could have plumped for his Race of My Life?
I think if you're going for the significance thing, you could make a case for his effort in the 1960 Portuguese Grand Prix. So this, as I said earlier, this is when he's still waging World Motorcycle Grand Prix campaign, a successful one at that. So it's his third World Championship race, and he puts the Lotus 18 on pole in Porto. Loses out to Dango in his BRM early on, but he's holding off Stirling Moss. You know, he gets ahead of Stirling Moss. He's holding off, you know, who's the established top guy at the time. Sorry, Jack Brabham fans, but I think that is the case. And Gurney's BRM has problems, and that leaves Surtees in the lead. Moss has problems as well, so he's about to win his third start, his third start in a World Championship race, which is pretty amazing. But then he has an oil leak that's coming out of the footwell, and in the end, he slips off the pedal at the wrong moment and actually goes off and out of the race, so he doesn't win that race. But in terms of making a statement very early on in your four-wheeled career, I think that's quite impressive. That we'd be hailing that as an amazing performance here if that was to happen today with someone in their third race.
Absolutely, and just to come in and make an instant impression amongst so many legends you just listed there, I guess they would have been pretty impressed by what they saw on the track.
Well, he also, another one that stands out, non-championship race, Glover Trophy at Goodwood. You know, he beat Moss. Moss was in the Lotus 18 and Surtees was in the Cooper T53, which I think by and large wouldn't have been regarded as a faster car. It was probably a better car in terms of being more reliable, but it wasn't necessarily faster. So very early on, in his first motor race, he beat Jim Clark, so who was also starting his career at that point, to be fair. But pretty much from the word go, his motorcycle experience has obviously given him, you know, a massive leg up, and he really should have won more races and championships than he did.
Absolutely. Well, I think we've come to the point in the episode where I have to make my random judgment. I always feel a bit guilty about doing this because, you know, really it's just this guy's
opinion. Who are you, Alex? Who are you?
Well, quite. How dare I? You know what I mean? But anyway, no, it's just a good bit of fun. But so do we think this comes down to 1964 Mexico versus 1963 Germany?
On Surtees' own criteria, it would do, wouldn't it? Because of the significance point. I quite fancy the Solitude race because of the wet, but ultimately he does lose that race, and it's a non-championship event. Maybe that holds against it if you're talking about points as well. So, I guess I like the Nürburgring because it's the Nürburgring, but I appreciate that I'm a bit of a broken record on that.
No, but I think I'm leaning that way as well, simply because I think, for me, you've got that factor, that the difficulty factor, the opposition who he beats and defeats comprehensively in Jim Clark, and also as I said earlier on, just the fortune that smiles on him, fully deserved, in Mexico 1964. But that sort of as a race by itself, I think Nürburgring has to go ahead. So there we go. The random guy who talks on a podcast has spoken, has decided. So make of that what you will. But you know, as I said, I think it's just a good way to debate and decide things on such a fun topic.
I'm concerned we may agree with our drivers and team bosses too often. Maybe we should be a bit, or maybe I should look for ones that are more controversial when I'm looking. I mean, there are hundreds and hundreds of Race of My Life entries in the Autosport magazine going back to the late 1980s, and I'm fortunate enough to have most of them at home, which is helpful during this lockdown time. Maybe I'll try and find some that are just completely crazy that we can rip apart. But
he is rather hard to disagree with someone of the stature and reputation and just, you know, success of the late John Surtees, though, I think.
Yes, that's true. But it also depends on the criteria. We've talked recently about John Surtees and Jackie Stewart, and they kind of argue their case very well. Sometimes people pick them more on an emotional one. I found James Hunt the other day, and he insisted on listing about three or four races before finally whoever was doing the interview must have had to work quite hard, I think, to make nailing down to the choice in the end. So that by definition gives us some stuff to talk about when we get to doing him.
Yeah, maybe we need to establish a firm criteria for this about where we can and can't overrule. I think as a bit like, you know, obviously I haven't had to use this for real yet, but the Autosport driver ratings for each race, there's a set criteria about what makes a 10 and a 9, 8, 7, all the way down to 1 and potentially 0. So maybe we need to establish some rules that we can use each time.
I mean, I'm fairly clear what my rules are because I apply the same to my top 10s here. But you've got your Grand Prix rating guidelines, so that's two slightly different approaches. But I suspect most of the time we're going to end up in the same place. But I'll see if I can dig out some ones that are perhaps a little bit more controversial.
Absolutely. Well, I just think, you know, it's just a fascinating to look back at different eras of motor racing and just hear what people thought about their own performances.
Absolutely. It's actually a shame just thinking about a controversial one. I know that Ayrton Senna rated his 85 Portuguese Grand Prix better than his 1993 European race. So that would have been a good one to debate, because obviously a lot of people, especially British-based fans, would immediately think of Donington for his greatest race. But that's not the one I don't think he'd have picked. But yeah, sadly, no one got to do that interview before Imola 94. That's a bit of a sad note to finish on, isn't it? Perhaps I'll let you come up with an ending. You're better at this sort of thing than me.
We'll see what we can come up with in terms of more controversial ones, where perhaps we're going to start arguing with some motorsport legends, but that would be pretty cool. So, thank you very much, Kev. I thoroughly enjoyed that chat about John Surtees' Race of My Life. And we hope you did too, as you were listening. You know, do get in touch. Let us know what you think, first of all, of this episode, of this pick, what Surtees thought, you know, what we've said today. And just let us know what your opinion of Surtees' Race of My Life pick and his career and also the others that we've recorded as well. Thanks again to Kev, thanks to you for listening, and very finally, thanks to our editor Martin Lee for editing this episode.